to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Anna Page. And we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West. We have Audrey Hall, Jesse Bridges, Paul Durham, and Jason Wickens in the studio.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hey.
Hello. I know that you are all brought together for various reasons. You've been working in the music industry together, and there's this new project called Move the Needle that includes 10 songs by artists with ties to Montana, but it's a little bit more than a standard music release. You've been working with artists as well who've made these artful covers. Let's talk about collaboration. Obviously, you work across many mediums and together. Audrey, yourself as a photographer, musician, really kick-ass artist, let's talk about your process and how you brought all these people together.
So I've always really been interested in cross-pollinating disciplines. And a lot of my work, when I'm working in the studio and working visually, is inspired by music. I listen to music. I tend to take drives with music, to sort of think and prompt sparks for the creative process or my creative process. So for me, music has always been integrated in with my visual art. And more recently, I've actually been starting to play music and compose and write music, which surprisingly has also informed my visual art. And through this process and through sort of the connection between music and art, I wanted to somehow create a broader project sort of beyond my own work and beyond my own studio and bring people together to, you know, for the mutual benefit of all the artists. And that was sort of the starting point of the Move the Needle project.
Now, you've described music for you, it kind of hit you over the head, that it was a lot like making a painting. It is a fine art that requires a lot of skill, a lot of energy, and yet maybe it's not treated the same way as other art disciplines.
Yeah, the first time I ever went into the recording studio was with Paul, who has been so kind as to collaborate with me and mentor me and basically act as the producer in the recording studio. And as we were working, putting these songs into a form that could be received by other people in some sort of format that's not a live setting, I realized that the process of recording music is so similar to painting or sculpture in the sense that you're starting with a blank canvas and you are adding color and layers and texture and story and all these elements that are pretty much the exact same thing as painting and sculpture, but it's just in an audio form. It's just a form that you're listening to. And one of the real disconnects for me was the realization that these musicians, these songwriters, these composers are putting every bit the art and the craft into their recordings as a painter or sculptor is putting into their works of art. And music is sort of the most, I think, received art form in our lives. It's the art form that really permeates everybody's lives every day, all the time. But yet as a musician or as a recording artist, because of the business model of it, it's just incredibly difficult to have a sustainable income or sustainable career. The art form in itself is sort of expected for free. And I just thought that that's an incredible injustice to an art form that has such an impact on our lives. In going through that intellectually, I thought, well, what would happen if we tried to like turn that model on its head a little bit and approach it in a different way?
Paul, you've been on major labels and also working as an indie artist. What has your experience been in the music business? It's a pretty ruthless place.
Yeah, it can be. And I was interested in Audrey's idea of kind of taking music and musical, you know, the product of musical work into a gallery space, and how can we kind of bridge the gap between visual arts and music. And I think that's something that bands do when they offer like vinyl or special box sets or signed posters or anything. They're kind of bringing the physical, visual aspect of what they do to fans.
Also a way to make money, I mean, because you're getting very little off of, you know, your digital footprint in a lot of cases.
Yeah, you know, I'm quite torn about it because on the one hand, when I started out, I had a couple major labels pouring hundreds of thousands of dollars into promoting my work and building a base for me. And yet they completely controlled every element of the distribution. And now anybody can make a record and upload it off their laptop in a matter of hours and have complete control over the distribution. And yet there aren't as many six-figure checks coming down the pike. So it is a mixed bag. But I think, you know, I think that's the case with everybody in every industry. On some level, every industry is being disrupted, and so.
Oh yeah, I felt a lot of parallels to my industry in the newspaper biz, at least.
Yeah,
there is a fire hose of information out there. It's hard to know what to trust or you know what's really quality, and no one's really willing to pay for it. And I saw a lot of similarities between, you know, news as information and music as a commodity product that is really being taken advantage of in these large conglomerate streaming systems. Mm-hmm. But as you say, there's so much more access than we've ever had before. So as a consumer, I think maybe you're trying to shift the paradigm on the value system, perhaps.
Yeah, and for me as an artist, I prefer now because of the technology. I have much more control in terms of the work I want to make and the ways in which I can distribute it. As a breadwinner, it can be rougher, but for me, the trade-off is worth it.
So, yeah. Jesse, you live in California, but you're here quite a bit. Your family lives in Montana. What's the music biz like for you? And do you find that there's a lot of similarities in Montana, or are your worlds very different?
My worlds are quite different. As far as music goes, I have been playing for many years, but I don't play regularly. And I wonder if that's because entering the business side was so difficult. And when I decided to pursue music as kind of the sole thing that was driving me, it ended up taking a lot of joy out of the craft for me. So it became something that I did purely for the sake of enjoyment rather than a business thing. When Audrey and I kind of came together, we had a show this past summer. It brought up for me the value in collaboration. And I get to Montana, I would say, about 3 to 4 times a year. And so having music be one of the driving forces that brings me here and brings me in touch with new people and doing new projects is so important to me.
Yeah, that collaborative spirit in this latest Move the Needle project is really inspiring to see. What was it like to have an artist render your likeness? I believe it was Judd Thompson, who did a really great kind of pop art influenced album cover for you.
Absolutely. I was blown away. I was so impressed. I don't know that I was able to even have an expectation going into it. It's so hard to imagine what someone's going to create based off of your music that you submit or something that has moved you to create. But wow, what an incredible thing to be a part of and to see his work.
All the work that has come together. Audrey, was it what you expected?
Yes and no. I mean, when you set out to do this kind of a project, I think that you have an idea initially, but then it's sort of like takes its own course depending on the participation level. In the process, there are things that just naturally sort of evolve and develop that you may or may not expect or anticipate. On the way to the studios here, we just popped into the gallery to kind of see how things were going. And it was just extraordinary to see all these elements come together in what artists are doing, even beyond just the straight up collaboration between the recording artists and the visual artists. But then some of the artists were also creating additional works that would traditionally be found, say, in a classic record store like Tower Records, but as pieces of fine art. And they were just, it was just extraordinary to see and very unexpected.
I like how you draw the parallel to record stores, because I think that that is the one place where that music community still exists and is incredibly strong. Records are making a comeback. I mean, it's not really breaking news because they're still a very small percentage of the overall sales for music, but that people want something tangible, they want something in their hands, and maybe that artistic bent for album covers is coming back too.
You know, in the world of like, everybody's striving for, you know, hundreds of thousands of streams. To me, it's wonderful to see a project pressed into 50. And there's 10 songs on the album, and so there's 10 pieces of art in an edition of 5. So it's a really tiny edition, and it's an opportunity to acquire, you know, a Kevin Red Star piece, who is incredibly famous.
It is interesting. It definitely shifts the pricing model when you're only printing 50.
Yeah. And so it sort of like has an accessibility to like a younger collector who may not be able to afford a Kevin Red Star painting. I mean, he's in the Smithsonian and the State Department, and he's really revered. But you can buy an album that's, it's much more accessible. And for the musicians, I think it's special to have like a small exclusive release.
Jason, I'm curious about your winding background to music. You have come to start live from the Divide, and I'm wondering where that came from for you.
You know, it was really just born out of selfishly wanting to hear my favorite songwriters, honestly. And then it developed into the public radio format. It's an hour-long program. And it's basically the same as Austin City Limits. There's no host. It's just they have an hour uninterrupted. Some people tell really great long stories. Other people just do one-liners. So it's always fascinating to see every individual songwriter or artist approach. And they are the host. They interact with the crowd. It's only 50 seats. So when they're in there, they're just a foot away. Right. So it's really a conversation more so that the artist has with the crowd.
It's that idea back to what Audrey was saying about a limiting, perhaps. There's only 50 seats. It makes it a special experience that you're not going to get anywhere else, except, of course, if you listen to the program after the fact.
It's true. Yeah. And gosh, we're going on 9 years. And back in the, it took a long time to, you know, get discovered for people to know we were even there. Because, gosh, we've had artists like Sturgill Simpson or, you know, Tyler Childers, and, you know, they didn't sell out a couple of years ago. And it was always a struggle to get people in the room. But after enough time and after enough people had those experiences and they told their friends, I mean, it's really just a word of mouth venue, even still. And people, that's why they come. You're exactly, that's exactly right. They come for that experience that they know they probably won't get, you know, the next time they see him at a large venue.
I'm curious about the idea of listening rooms. Paul, follow me on this too, as you were talking about technology. And we oftentimes go to a performance to focus in, but yet I still see a lot of cell phones in concerts, and I still see a lot of distraction. Are these smaller spaces requiring people to pay more attention?
Yeah, I mean, for me, my ideal as an artist is to play in a room with no amplification, for me to just play into the space and what's happening is not being increased in volume in any way. You know, I really love the intimacy of that. My songs are not necessarily story songs. There's not necessarily a narrative going on, but each one is kind of an encompassing story for a particular situation, either fictional or non-fictional, that like I'm presenting. And so in the same way that you can imagine telling a story to a big crowd of people through a loud PA system of people you can't see versus telling someone face-to-face a story, you know, it's just much more powerful for both parties, and again takes some of the commodification out of that music exchange.
Is that format realistic to have such a small imprint every time you do this?
I don't know. The music industry is a mystery. I don't know.
Yeah, Jason, what were you going to say?
Yeah, it's definitely it's a mystery. Like I mentioned earlier, it's just starting to come around to where people are really paying attention and they're wanting to come to every show. For the artists, they're willing to take a little price cut, you know, for what they usually get, and, you know, to have a different experience and to have that break from, you know, selling beer. That's 90% of what happens, and it's not a bad thing. It's just the reality of playing out live. People are coming to have a good time and relax, and you can still do that, like in our little room at Live from the Divide, but definitely, you know, whoever's sitting next to you, if you pull a cell phone out, they'll give you a dirty look, or if you're chatting with your friend, you know, they'll let you know. It's not realistic, but I think that's why it's important to do stuff like Move the Needle and, you know, to try to come up with these creative concepts that take time, energy, and resources. But if you do it for long enough, it starts to become more of a sustainable thing.
Collaboration seems to really push you out of a comfort zone, perhaps, when you are forced into playing with people that you don't normally play with. I imagine it changes the dynamic every time. Jesse, do you often collaborate with other artists?
I really enjoy collaborating so much because I find that it kind of throws me off a bit, and it initially brings up a lot of insecurities in myself, you know. How am I going to be experienced by this other person or these other people? Or, you know, what's it going to bring up for me? And then once I'm open to the idea, it's so much better than it ever was on my own. And I was actually just thinking back to this show that I did in Oakland, where I live, where my friend, it was a similar thing where he brought a group of songwriters together and each of us performed, I believe it was 3 songs, and it was called Phony Baloney, and it was a phone-free show. So everyone was required to turn their phones off before the show. And as a performer, it made me feel so much more in touch with myself during my performance, knowing that there was going to be no photos taken or video, or people weren't going to be distracted in their own worlds. And then when I was able to sit in the audience and watch my peers perform, I was just able to concentrate and listen and feel moved by what they were sharing. And collaboration is just so special in that way, right? You don't know what it's going to bring up for you. And it's really unique.
And Audrey, you've been working with so many different people. Collaborations obviously pushed you into some pretty creative places.
Oh, absolutely.
I think about your Saint Art with Laurie Sargent's new album.
Yes.
Incredible, incredible visual that required a lot of these different mediums coming together.
I think that as a visual artist, I work by myself most of the time. I absolutely seek out opportunities where I can work with other people because I feel like I learn so much and I grow so much and I'm able to sort of receive other perspectives and approaches that I probably wouldn't come up with on my own. So the experience is really valuable. I mean, music to me is really interesting because it's viscerally experienced. It's an art form that is, you know, it can change your body chemistry and composition. And because I'm a beginner, I'm not a veteran musician. I've not been playing for very long. I don't have any experience. I really rely heavily on working with other people to help me sort of navigate those waters of creativity.
The Stapleton Gallery, too, has long positioned themselves as a gallery that pushes people into a format that they might not be comfortable with, or something that is a wholly new way to look at art. I think about maybe the Trophy Room show and what trophies mean to you and the art that you did there, collecting and photographing, something that maybe you wouldn't have come to on your own.
Definitely. I mean, the interesting thing about working with a gallery that's theme-based is you never know what the theme is, and it is absolutely going to take you out of your box. Every single show that I've done for them, that when the theme has been presented, it's always been something like, wow, I would never make something in that genre or in that theme normally, and it takes a lot of thought and courage and taking yourself out of your comfort zone to create new works. And I really appreciate that. I thrive on that.
Audrey said a thing that a lot of people say to me, which is like, oh, I'd love to write songs, or I want to get better at singing. And I always say, well, you should come to my studio, because the best way to get better at singing is to hear yourself back. And Audrey, pretty much unlike everybody else, actually took me up on it and brought in a song and was really open to my feedback. And she's really interesting because she's a beginner in the music arena, or I would say she was. But she's this masterful visual artist. So she was kind of able to take her aesthetic and the discipline and transfer it over to a new genre. That was really satisfying for me and actually kind of sparked a business in artist coaching. And so I'm doing artist mentoring now for different people. And what I've seen for her is, and I recognize this in myself, is by collaborating, it sparks new things in our original approach to work. You know, it's like, oh, I can take this thing that I learned in collaboration with this other person, reintegrate it back into my own work and kind of breathe some new life into it, because that's really the key for all artists, is like keeping what we're doing new and awake.
Well, and how important to have a place, I call it a sandbox. Like, I think every arts community needs a sandbox, a place to play, a place to explore, and also a place to hear yourself back. And you bring up a good point that the only way to really get better is to continue doing this, but also to be able to observe, receive feedback, and move forward.
Yeah, which is it's an important part of going and seeing music, and also of kind of mixing it up and combining with other musicians. So.
Yeah, it makes me think of, Jason, back to the Live at the Divide, the idea of maybe it is pretty challenging for an artist to get in a room of 50 people versus 5,000 maybe. Maybe that's more nerve-wracking.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I see it all the time because, you know, really there's no place to hide. And in between songs, when they're a foot away from you, you have to really be sure of yourself and, you know, the things that you would like to express. And most are. It takes a few songs, I think, and then they're like, oh, I'm going to be okay. Like, they're not going to throw stuff at me.
Have you ever had anybody wing anything?
Nope, not yet. We might be past those days. But on the collaboration, I recently had someone do the same thing. They approached me and expressed, hey, you know, I really want to get into this. And we had this really long, I think it was like a two-hour-long, you know, meeting or conversation. And he said, you know, it'd be great if there was a songwriting group. And my first thought was, that sounds terrible. You know, like, it sounded like work. But then I thought, you know, that might be good. And I took him up on it. And there's only three of us. It's, you know, it's, we meet like once a month. And I've gotten more out of meeting with those two, just inspiration and insight, than I have in a long time with songwriting. Because I think it brings you back to those kind of core elements that you forget, the basics, back to the basics, right? And then watching somebody progress is incredibly inspiring, you know? Totally. Like this guy that just said, hey, I want to do this. And then, you know, he's coming with two songs every month. And I'm like, man, I'm slacking. I got a half a song, you know? And then their input is, you know, incredibly insightful. And I just think everybody's creative. And I think everybody has it in them. It's like that very childlike curiosity. And I've always said, I love what you were talking about earlier, Audrey, is that I've always said it's like a blank canvas, a song is. And you can make it whatever you want. You can tell a story in a painting, absolutely. You know, you can make it whatever you want. But I think that's helpful to think of it that way. It's like you're just sitting down to a blank piece of paper or a blank canvas, and you get to pick your colors and your expression, and that's really cool.
I have to laugh because I just kept thinking, well, you can maybe make it whatever you want, but I can't because I have a very difficult time in the music world translating what might be in my head into the world because I'm not that good of a player. So what's been really wonderful is in working with Paul, who has been writing and playing and performing and has had this incredible career in music, he can help me make that happen. So I can't necessarily make that happen for myself, but in having this collaborative relationship, what he brings to the table is so valuable, because so much, it's just like, I just can't do it. So I might provide like a skeleton or a sketch, you know, and then Paul helps actually make it a painting.
All I do is say, this is good. Why aren't these other parts as good as this part? Go work on it more.
It's really inspiring to see that mentorship, because I think in some art scenes I've experienced a disdain for amateurs, and I've always pushed back on that idea of people who perhaps hog the stage, and I say, get out of the way. There's new voices that need to be heard, and if you have a place that you've carved out for yourself in the world, I think it is important to reach out and help bring others up too. So thank you for doing that and sharing these ideas. I'd be real remiss not to ask for a song. And Paul, you have graciously brought a guitar into the studio. What do you got for us?
I have a song.
Let's hear it. Okay.
There's a heart at the bottom of the sea, waiting for someone to come and retrieve me. There's a train leaving tonight. It feels like death, but I know it's only time. I'll be lonely when you're gone, when you're gone from me now. I'll be lonely, lonely. When morning comes, I'm gonna bury my head, get me a bottle, go back to bed instead of waking up and facing the world without my love, without my sweetest girl. I'll be lonely when you're gone away from me now. I'll be lonely, lonely, waiting, waiting, waiting.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I can see why you like those small rooms and acoustic only. That's a beautiful sound.
Thank you.
Audrey Hall, Jesse Bridges, Paul Durham, and Jason Wickens, thank you so much for being here. It's been such a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains is produced by Corby Skinner, Anna Page, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Naumann. Additional funding provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. More information on Resounds is available at ybradio.org.